Before we get into today's episode, I want to invite you on a unique spiritual journey this Advent season. It's called Journey to Bethlehem, and it's a free 9-day text message series designed to prepare your heart for Christmas. Starting on December the 17th, and each day leading up to Christmas, you'll receive a short reflective message pointing you to the hope, peace, joy, and love found in the coming of Christ. It's completely free and a great way to keep your focus on Jesus this season. Sign up today at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now here's today's podcast.
This New Year's Eve, get ready for the ultimate crossover celebration. The Liberty Church Global invites you to join us at one of our three events in either London at the O2 Intercontinental, the Grand Hotel in Birmingham, or at the Landmark Centre, Lagos, Nigeria. Join Dr. Shola Fola-Alade and an incredible lineup of guest artists, including Sumi Sola Agbebi, Dare Justified, Prince Emmanuel, and many more. London, Birmingham, or Lagos, you're covered. Start your 2026 with a bang. Doors open at 8 p.m. in the UK and 10 p.m. in Lagos. Head to tlccrossover.com/radio now to grab your free tickets. Three cities, one unforgettable night. Register for your free tickets. tlccrossover.com/radio now.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis Podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
In this episode, we're going to be hearing from Stefan Kinnaby, who has got an MA in both philosophy and theological studies. He's written about various aspects of C.S. Lewis's work and is working on a book about hell. We don't know yet when it's going to come out, but there is a book about hell in the making. And Stefan will be sharing some of the context for a paper that he recently presented at the Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Stefan's paper was Revelations in the Thought of C.S. Lewis, Freedom, Theodicy, Hell and the Influence of George MacDonald between 1940 and 1956. Stefan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Oh, well, I'm particularly pleased that you're joining me because you've just had a little boy. So I'm well aware that you are completely sleep deprived. So I'm even more grateful that you've taken time out of your busy schedule to talk to us today.
Thank you. Yeah. No, it's no trouble. What do you do? He's a baby.
Stefan, before we talk specifically about your paper, which obviously looks at some really interesting elements of C.S. Lewis's thoughts, would you share just a little bit about your studies and what was the focus of your most recent master's and why did you decide to focus on those particular areas?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got it right here. I grew up in the Reformed Church, which is a Calvinist denomination. But I had a bit of a crisis of faith around sort of like ninth grade, going into high school. And that's when I encountered C.S. Lewis. And I was sort of thinking like, do I just believe this because my parents believe it or whatever? But I was given Mere Christianity for my ninth grade graduation. And I read that first and I went, oh, okay. Huh. And that gave me lots to think about. And I really, really enjoyed reading that book. And I found it really challenging and positive. And then I got Screwtape Letters on audiobook. And I listened to that. And I was like, oh, man, I do all of these things. I felt very convicted. And that started like a bit of a love affair with C.S. Lewis. And as I sort of read through his things, I continued to struggle with some of the free will versus determinism thing coming from the perspective and the background that I did theologically. Obviously, Lewis in Mere Christianity is much more sort of a Arminian sort of perspective, I think. And And reading through just in my own time, I saw like there was sort of a like a tonal shift I found between sort of his early stuff and his late stuff, even when he's doing more theological type writing. Like I really enjoy Reflections of the Psalms, for example. And Surprised by Joy too. I read Surprised by Joy, and having read all of his apologetic works, I was like, this is not what I expected. It feels really different, not just because of it's a narrative, but I felt like theologically it was different, and all these things sort of bothered me. And so when I finished school, my undergrad, I was kind of not like, I was like, I'm really good at school. I don't know what else to do. So, and I really enjoyed my philosophy classes. And I really enjoyed like Reformed theology as a, or philosophy as a really big emphasis on like taking your faith that, you know, we weren't created just to be Christians in church. It should be infusing all areas of life. And I found that very powerful. So I did a master's at the Institute for Christian Studies, and my thesis for that ended up being called A Different Conversion by a Different C.S. Lewis, An Analysis of Surprised by Joy. And I just, I looked at that, picking up some of those shifts in terms of the emphasis of sort of revelation and the role of his conversion, not just of these powerful experiences of joy, but also like really intense experiences of the deep wrongness of a world damaged by sin, right? I mean, oftentimes people go, man, why does he spend all this time on his time in school and how miserable he is and so forth? But I think, and a lot of people complain, right? They're like, oh, well, how accurate was it really to what actually happened? But I think it's important for the narrative. And you see this, he talks about this a little bit in the introduction. You know, he's not trying to write a strict biography, but what it does is it gets you into the headspace of like, you know, why does he have this violent reaction of God? But the flip side is, of course, if God isn't real, then how do you explain this deep wrongness, right? Like he's got a sense of sin even when he's young. And like I think a lot of sort of the angrier kind of people who reject Christianity, they've got a sense of sin, and that's exactly why they're rejecting it. But then how do you explain it, right? And so I did that, and then I finished. I took a little break from my master's, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll go back to school, maybe not. But I had sort of this thing where all of my friends who were doing their PhDs were miserable, and all of my friends who finished them couldn't find work. And I'm not trying to discourage anybody from pursuing that as your career. But my sister was a musician. And at one point, we realized we were sort of on the same track. We were like, we don't like selling ourselves, and we don't like working constantly for free in the hopes that it'll, you know, that will make it big, which sort of, it seems like it's actually a similar thing. It's kind of like, if this was all you need, it's a great field. But if you want a sort of a more well-rounded life, maybe it's not the career for you. And so I sent out some applications. And by the time I sort of decided, I don't think I'm going to go forward. And I'd prayed a lot about it. And I kept having things where I would have somebody lined up and then they'd retire, or their colleague would die and they would get all of that person's students. And, you know, so my PhDs kept not happening, and I would be praying, Lord, like, close the door if you don't want me to do it. And I'm like, okay, maybe he doesn't want me to do it, and I'm okay with that. And then I got in at Wycliffe College, which is a wonderful college at the Toronto School of Theology. And they gave me a scholarship to do a master's, and it was compressed. It was 1 year. And I was like, well, I mean, if they're going to pay me to do it. And I had thought about ordination and stuff, and I thought, okay, well, this could be good prep for that. So I went there and I did another one. And that master's was called Revolutions in the Thought of C.S. Lewis, Freedom, Health, Theodicy, and the Influence of George MacDonald. And so it's very similar to what my paper is, but much, much more in depth. Yeah. And basically what was coming up there is in my Surprised by Joy paper, my first master's, I had noticed, but didn't know what to do with it, this very weird thing that in Surprised by Joy, when he converts, he talks about, you know, God's compulsion is our liberation and stuff. Mm. And it's just like, I don't know how to reconcile that, you know, in the years after writing that. I was like, how do I fit that with, you know, in The Great Divorce, you've got the guy and the angels who are trying to, or the saved people who are trying to convince their relatives, they can't even force them to stop and listen to them, much less, you know, and the importance of the choice is so monumental in sort of earlier things. And in that one, he's like, you know, I felt like it was the freest choice that I ever made, but also it wasn't really possible for me to do otherwise. And in Problem of Pain, he explicitly is like, if it's not possible to do otherwise, it's not free. And obviously those are different contexts. But it sat on my mind, and then I read George MacDonald, because I'd read you know, I was reading through all of Lewis's stuff because I just like him, whether I was going to do a PhD on it or not. And so I was reading through C.S. Lewis, and he's got the his little 365-day readings of George MacDonald book that he put out. And in the intro to that, you know, he's just so effusive about George MacDonald. He's like, this guy's my spiritual mentor. I've never written a book where I didn't quote him. Nobody seems to recognize how big an influence he was, which I think is still probably true. People talk about sort of fantasties and it's that side of it. But that book's almost all, I think it's like 95% or 90% quotations from the Unspoken Sermons. So I read the Unspoken Sermons and I thought, okay, these are interesting. And then I went back to Till We Have Faces. And I was like, oh, the end of Till We Have Faces is like exactly the way MacDonald envisions hell working. And I was like, is there a choice anywhere in here? And there's not. It's like, in fact, I kind of compile it into that paragraph in my talk, but it's like, she's like compelled and she's like, I don't want to do it. And she's, you know, and every step of the way she's, it's actually quite troubling. But that's where I was like, okay, what's going on here? And then I went into his letters. I found some interesting stuff in his letters that I couldn't go into in the talk. But yeah, there seems to be this tension. And it's really tricky, and I don't think I've sorted it out. And I'm sure some Lewis scholar down the road will. But and if I'd done my PhD, that's probably what I would have been on. But there's some really interesting tensions, right? On the one hand, you've got to have the freedom if you're going to have the theodicy, and there is a sense where, like, clearly God wants us to sort of have as much freedom as we can and participate as much as possible in our own salvation. And I do think, like, even in George MacDonald's, right, like, he thinks everyone's going to be saved, but like they have to choose. God just doesn't give up, right? He's like, fine, I'll wait you out. Essentially, is MacDonald's idea of so, you know, yeah, you'll be saved, but like, you know, if you have to go to hell and he has to wait for you to figure it out, he will, sort of horribly simplifying it. But yeah, so on the one hand, there's definitely that freedom thing. And so it needs to be possible for the theodicy. And then there's also the problem of, like, you have to be able to constrain yourself by your own choices, right? Like, even God, to be in covenant, has to be able to restrict his own freedom, right? If he can't make decisions that impinge his freedom in the future, he can't be in relationship. So he can't have covenant with Israel. So obviously that sort of freedom to do this, to do that, to constrain yourself has to be a real thing. But on the flip side, there is this thing I find in scripture where freedom seems to be talked about as freedom from sin. And sort of the freedom to sin, particularly if you take it as Lewis says in The Problem of Pain, where, you know, if they didn't have the possibility of the fall, they wouldn't really be free. Well, then in a sense, Adam and Eve are freer than people in heaven. They're freer than God because for them, sinning is a real possibility. But if you look at MacDonald, I mean, he makes a good point that if you're insane and you make a terrible choice, how free is that choice, right? I mean, if you're from God's perspective, he's free to sin if he wanted to. He's not going to because he understands what sin is. Right? We're creatures and we have a flawed perspective, right? Like, I'm free to put my hand on a burning hot stove element, but I'm not ever going to do it. You know, if I lived for a million years, I would never intentionally do that. There's no circumstance where that would be what I would want to do. And if I were in such a state that I thought that was a good idea, that would be a problem. And so there's this problem of, like, how free is a decision to sin? And there are ways of looking at theodicy where you can look at freedom in that sort of second way. I think it's Arrhenius who sort of has this idea of, it could have gone better, but like humanity, right? Like, and you can find this in Genesis if you look into the word for good that they use over and over in Hebrew in that story is like a potential good. It's not a perfection good, right? It is good, but there's some unfolding that can happen. It's not the final state. And so Arrhenius, if I remember correctly, sort of, you know, it's a different from from Lewis's theodicy as and Mere Christianity. It's more of a, well, we're made separate from God. We're not complete, which is how the fall was able to happen. But, you know, we could have done better. But ultimately, we'll be in such a state where that wouldn't have been a problem, and some sort of developmental process was necessary, and that's why. Honestly, I think theodicies, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, you know, I mean, the Bible could have addressed it. Instead, we got Job, probably. probably God's answer to the problem of evil is what he's doing through Jesus and salvation history. It's not an explanation. And, you know, I'm sure when we're saved, we'll look back and go, but I mean, from our position, we're sort of at Job's spot where we're kind of like, well, you know, we've had certain answers X'd off. For me personally, I'm not super stressed about exactly figuring out why the fall happened. I mean, I trust Jesus and I'm good for that. But anyway, that's how I got interested in all these things. And that's how I got to this. And I think you can see from Lewis's letters, I'm sorry, I'm rambling, but that his confidence in how he thinks about freedom shifts, and totally why, right, like a real in-depth study could happen. I think it might be part of why he shifts away a little bit from apologetics, but you can see it in his letters where he talks about, you know what, I've got them right here, but he says some really interesting things, and this isn't in the paper. So, and you can see a real shift, right? Like in 1953, you've got all this Calvinist question. This is Lewis talking in a letter from October 1953. All this Calvinist question, free will and predestination, is to my mind undiscussable and insoluble. I suspect it is really a meaningless question, the difference between freedom and necessity. When we carry it up to relations between God and man, has the distinction perhaps become nonsensical? After all, when we are most free, it is only with the freedom God has given us. And when our will is most influenced by God, this is the interesting part, when our will is most influenced by God, by grace, it is still our will. And if it is our will, does not voluntary and involuntary... Sorry, he has spelling mistakes in his letter that are preserved in the letter. And I realize it's actually quite hard to read out loud. but basically, if voluntary does not mean free, then like, what are we talking about? Basically, right? Like it's, but influenced by grace and it still being our will is very much the feeling I get from Surprised by Joy. It's like God steps in and he's like, this is the most free I've ever been. And so the way I read it is, you know, God stepping in and being like, okay, I'm going to wipe away this stuff that you've done to yourself through sin. And let you see be. And if you really were free from sin and your option was God or becoming nothing, there's no question what you would choose. Mm. Another, one last letter, the little excerpt from a letter is, this isn't a letter where he's discussing like Christian Science, but anyway, faith not oversimplifications is what will help, don't you think? It is so very different to believe that the travail of all creation, which God himself descended to share at its most intense, may be necessary in the process of turning finite creatures with free wills into gods. So right, he's saying basically the oversimplifications of Christian Science isn't doing, it's faith that's the answer. And I think that's what you get in, like, Till We Have Faces, right? At the end, after this whole book of questioning, she says, you know, in the face of you, God, all questions die away, right? And I think that's it. I mean, it's the character of God that settles the problem of suffering more than, right? Arguments are really helpful. And I think they're really good in proving that Christianity is not irrational. It's certainly rationally defensible, but there are lots of really tricky questions. and God doesn't necessarily find it necessary to answer them all for us. Mm. And so I don't have a problem with having a certain amount of, right? Like I continue asking certainly, but I don't feel like I need certainty on every point. You're not going to get it as an atheist or a Christian or anything. Mm. Anyway, that's my very, very long explanation of what I wrote and how I got into Lewis and sort of my paper as well. So,
the C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
As we near the end of the year, I want to pause and thank God for how he's worked through Premier Insight in 2025. From honest conversations on Unbelievable to the wisdom of N.T. Wright, this ministry has helped thousands grow in faith, defend truth, and engage culture with grace. But none of this happens without you. Right now, Premier Insight faces a $106,497 funding gap that must be closed by December the 31st. And thanks to a generous $25,000 challenge grant, your gift today will go even further to equip believers and reach seekers in 2026. Visit premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis to give now. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. And now, back to today's episode.
C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. Brilliant. Well, we're going to hear your paper very shortly. But before we do that, would you just say a little bit, I mean, you definitely touched on this, but how has Lewis specifically impacted your life or your faith journey? Do you think he sort of changed your mind on anything? Has he inspired you in any way? Yeah, that you're, is there any way that your life is different because of reading Lewis?
Well, I don't think I'd be a Christian if I didn't read Lewis. And I think that's, I certainly counted for my conversion because, like I said, when I was going sort of through my faith thing, I thought, I don't know if I believe any of this. Mm-hmm. And that's what sort of got me started. But also, he awoken me a joy of reading scripture. I think Lewis is very insightful, but like Reflections of the Psalms is one of my favorite things that I go back to a lot. But I think not just scripture, but Christian authors of all kinds because of him, like George MacDonald, I never would have heard of. But when I was younger, like I got into G.K. Chesterton because of him. And I think it's shaped my whole worldview in so, so many ways. It's the idea of G.K. Chesterton's book, The Everlasting Man, is great on this. But right, that paganism and philosophy, all these things were sort of flowing together, pointing towards Christ, right? It's not just even Jewish history. And then when Christ comes, it's almost like, you know, everything came into a focal point and then everything explodes back out with new life. But yeah, I mean, he's still an important part of my devotional life. I come back to it all the time. I think I've probably read Screwtape Letters like 1,000 times. And probably every year I come back and I read it. And even though I like should know it all, I'm still like, oh yeah, no, I'm still doing that thing. Right? There'll always be something that I'm like, oh yeah, nope. So it's very convicting. So no, I love C.S. Lewis. And just, yeah, so many positive things out of it. I mean, heck, I'm reading Spenser's Faery Queen because of stuff Lewis talks about in English literature in the 16th century. Right? It's like, it's constantly, and the Ring of Ouroboros, which I am having a hard time understanding. Right? So like Lewis's stuff is always unlocking new things that I should try and convicting me on my faith, right? Like the idea of your whole Christian life is dying to yourself will, right? Not what I will, but you will, Lord, and all that. Yeah. And so like, I'm really excited for when James is old enough, I can read him Narnia and right, start sharing some of the stuff with him. So yeah, no, I'm immensely grateful to Lewis. And like, I mean, I've been a lay preacher for like 10 years, right? Again, I think he's so good at communicating, right? And the whole reason I wanted to be a professor really wasn't to publish. It was that I wanted to sort of do the stuff that Lewis did for people, right? Like share them, get them excited about the gospel, open up what God has done for them to them. And so even though that didn't work out, right? Like my lay preaching, and I've done quite a few sermons for a while. I was doing sermons like every 6 weeks. Now it's a lot less because we've got James. Oh my gosh. In the last 6 weeks, I've had one sermon to write and it was going to be my last one. I was like, the baby was born early. I've got 6 weeks though. Oh, it's still not done. It's getting real close to the wire.
Do you know
it's
what?
Hard to do.
Tim Keller always said that if he started quoting C.S. Lewis or Tolkien, then his congregation would know that he hadn't done enough prep time. So you could just take a big chunk of C.S. Lewis, exposit it, stick in a couple of Bible verses, and there you go. He'll do the work for you.
I've heard that quotation, and I try not to quote Lewis particularly for that reason. I was like, nope, I've got to, and I try and do expository sermons, but actually I do, I'm talking about why do we need sacrifice? Because the sermon's on Hebrews where it talks about the sacrificial system. And it's like, okay, well, like, why were they doing sacrifice? Like, if Christ is fulfilling that, why? And one of the effects of sin I'm talking about is death. And I am quoting from Lewis. I'm talking about his experience in Surprised by Joy, seeing his mother. And so it's sort of like people talk about death as if, well, it's just like eating or drinking or making love. It's just a part of life that we have to get used to. It's like, no, it's not. We're subjects. We're not supposed to become objects, right? Like, you know, my loved one is not supposed to become the same thing as a lamp or a rug or a rock. You know, there's, you know, God's divine energy is in them. They're meant to be forever, and when we pretend to ourselves that we don't care about death, or that it's not something significant, that it's not something we need saving from, we're suppressing our natural response to it. Anyway, so I am falling into that trap, but what do you do?
Well, this might be really hard to whittle down, but do you have a favorite quotation or book or work or essay or letter of C.S. Lewis?
I like so many of them. I don't think I do.
Okay.
I think my favorite book, well, no, you know what? Probably like the last two pages of Tell We Have Faces is mm-hmm. probably my favorite sort of quotation, which I'm not going to quote. But, you know, the U2 or Psyche moment, and she hears the rush of God coming on. And this is also part of why I struggled with the free will thing. And part of it is, thank God for my Calvinist upbringing, because, you know, part of it that kept bothering me is if it's up to me accepting God, I'm toast, because I'm a mess, right? I might accept God today, but then I'll reject him tomorrow, right? Like, and so there's a sense that it's like, you know, I'm glad God is giving me sort of parameters in which I can participate, but ultimately it really better be up to him, totally. And of course, there, you can think that and sort of still be in an Armenian camp, right? There's nuances that I'm not getting into, but yeah. And so that end experience where she has had such a life and has resisted God, and God brings her through anyway. The end of that book, I bawl my eyes out. I try not to read it too often because it makes me so sad, because most of the book is quite sad. But the ending is so powerful. So yeah, my favorite book, Till We Have Faces, my favorite passage, the last couple pages. If you've read it, I've spoiled it all for you anyway. Just go and read the last few pages. It's beautiful.
And as you've already touched on, that's why they sort of talk about the fact that maybe there isn't an answer, but there is a person. And there's those amazing lines, isn't there? Before your face, questions die away. What other answer would suffice? Yeah. And I think that's so pertinent when we're talking about the problem of suffering, that actually there are things that can be said, but perhaps an answer, well, you know, some of it is still unknown, and perhaps an answer is not what you need. What you need is someone to come and be with you.
You need
in
Christ,
which is,
right? Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Which is what we get in the incarnation. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos, and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources, and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.